Hello, and welcome to Indie Business Podcast number 266. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, as you know, today is Cyber Monday. I hope you guys had a fantastic Thanksgiving holiday weekend. I want to tell you two things. My Indie Beauty Network members have great stuff all year long, but today, nearly every single bit of it is on sale. So after the show, make sure you wait till after the show because you don't want to miss this. I want you to head over to my Twitter stream at twitter.com/indiebusiness and my Facebook page at facebook.com/indiebusinessfans to get the lowdown on all the handmade deals. Something for everyone on your list from the amazing members of the Indie Beauty Network. But before you go back to shopping, because I know you've already been shopping, before you go back, if you're a small business owner, you need to take a 30-minute break with me right here, right now, because we are going to be discussing with our guest something very important that not a lot of small and independent business owners that I come in contact with think about: the importance of establishing a platform for your business and yourself, really, and how to use it to create new opportunities for you and your business. My guest today is very adept in this area because not only has he researched the topic better than anyone I know, but he's also built and is continuing to build his own platform. I can't think of any better person to share insights and tips in this area than Phil Simon. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. He is a recognized technology expert and a sought-after speaker. He consults companies on how to optimize their use of technology, and you know how passionate I am about that. His contributions have been featured on the Globe and Mail, the American Express Open Forum, which I love, Computer World, ZDNet, ABCNews.com, Forbes.com, The New York Times, Read, Write, Web, and many other sites and media outlets. He holds degrees from Carnegie Mellon University and Cornell University. And this new book, The Age of the Platform, is his fourth, and it is fantastic. And we have him all to ourselves here on my podcast. And plus, he's a super nice guy. Phil, welcome.
Set the bar very high, Donna Maria. How are you doing today?
Well, of course I said it high for you. I'm fantastic. Now, Phil, by the way, has just relocated to Las Vegas. So what better way to spend part of the holiday than in Las Vegas? But we are going to roll up our sleeves and get right down to business here, Phil. The name of your book is The Age of the Platform. For people who don't know, tell us, Phil, what is a platform and why do we care as small and independent business owners when we really just want to sell our stuff?
Sure. Well, I would argue that the platform is ultimately a means to sell your stuff, but let me come back to your first question. Around 6 or 7 months ago, when I was thinking about a follow-up for my last book, The New Small, which we discussed on one of your previous shows, I started thinking a lot about not just big companies, but big companies that were doing things in ways that The New Small could really learn from. So which big companies were doing very impressive and progressive things? And very quickly, it became obvious to me that there were four: Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. Now, these weren't companies that were successful by chance. They actually, if you look at it, had implemented some platform-oriented strategies. But really, to answer your question, what is a platform? It seems like the word had sort of entered the lexicon as kind of a buzzword, and many people, I thought, were using it incorrectly. People would talk about the iPad platform or the, you know, the Android platform. And to me, those really weren't platforms. Those were what I call in the book planks of existing platforms. So to answer your question on what is a platform, to me, quite simply, a platform is just a collection of integrated planks. And the most powerful platforms today, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, have built these incredible platforms, but they've also done something that I'm sure we'll talk about on our show today. They've really created these vibrant and powerful ecosystems. They encourage third-party developers to take their platforms to the next level. So in the case of, say, Facebook, you can create an app like Zynga has so people can play games on the Facebook platform. Or if you're Apple, any number of Apple partners, myself included, can build an app like I did for The New Small and put it out there. So, yes, I make money for me by selling the app, right? But I'm also making money for Apple. So that got into this notion of external-driven innovation and ways that these companies were just doing things outside of their own walls. They were giving people the tools and the incentives to be successful. So I realized early on that I had kind of a big idea for a book, and after 6 months later, there you go.
Okay, so a platform is a collection of integrated planks. Give me some examples of planks that don't deal with technology, like just small businesses that have, I mean, they're using technology, obviously. So I don't mean exclusively no technology. I just mean they're not in the business of technology.
Sure. Well, I would say that, let's say, for instance, that you're offering one line of service, so why not offer another? And I know that's kind of vague right now, but, you know, if I owned a barber shop, right, and I cut people's hair, why wouldn't I offer them the ability to do a shave?
Okay.
It seems simple, and a lot of my focus, as you know, is on technology, and technology is very much important today, but why wouldn't you offer sort of a related product or service? So to me, a plank, if you like, is just a feature or an offering or a product or a service.
Mm-hmm.
And these planks should be integrated, right? If I own a barbershop, I probably don't also have a room for giving ballet lessons. Right?
Well, so they have to make sense. So is it oversimplified or does it simplify in a good way to say that a plank can be a stream of income?
It can be, but I think that it's foolish to just say, well, if I can't make any immediate short-term money on it, then I don't want to develop it. Again, using Google as an example, Google has a feature called Labs, and they're constantly putting things out there that may not have any short-term monetization, right? But ultimately, it may lead to something long-term. So look, I'm not saying that you should throw out what you're doing and making, you know, your core business. That's not something I'm suggesting at all. And Google, just to continue with the example, Donna Maria, still makes most of its money through those little search ads that come up on the sides.
Right.
But I think it is important to experiment and not to dismiss something because you won't monetize it in a week. Remember, you're trying to ultimately build a user base and a community and a tribe, and hopefully some of the members of that tribe will become customers, but that may not happen overnight.
This is such an interesting conversation, and any business can do this. Let me, you know, I have a little analogy I want to run past you. I think about when you're creating your business, you like have a target, you have a bullseye. Like you mentioned, Google has, you know, their search ads is kind of like I can't remember the term you use, like where they make most of their money. So when you hit that bullseye, when you think about the way a bullet goes out, when a bullet goes out and hits the bullseye, there's like shrapnel and all kinds of stuff that hits other areas in the target almost by accident. So when you're hitting your bullseye, you're also, if you're hitting it really good and you're really focused and intent on doing that, is it fair to say that as you see other opportunities around you, you get some shrapnel out there, you get to actually bring in, as you call it in your book in Chapter 8, creating accidental lines of business almost?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just don't know what's going to be successful. I'll bring up Apple as a great example.
Okay.
You know, Steve Jobs, may he rest in peace, was an unadulterated genius. I just finished reading his biography by Isaacson, and it's a fantastic book.
Yes.
So let's continue with Apple for a minute. When you make the App Store available through iTunes and you have given the developers software development kits or SDKs, and you give people an incentive to develop apps, then you get something like Angry Birds, because there's just no way, smart as Steve Jobs was, he would have said, oh, we're going to do this specifically so we can have 20 million downloads of Angry Birds. But again, you're putting the things out there, you're giving people the tools and the incentives, and you don't know what's going to be popular. One of the things, Donna Maria, I'm most proud of in this book is that even though there's some tactical advice, and we're going to talk about that, I'm sure, later in the show, there's no checklist. I don't know the 10 things that you ought to do to be the next Google. I'm not that smart, and I would wager to guess that even the people inside Google don't exactly know, they can't predict the future. They don't know the 10 biggest things. So there are these happy accidents. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. There's a lot of experimentation and risk. And I think the days of developing a 5 or 10 year strategic plan for your company are quickly coming to an end. The world just moves too fast these days.
You do, and you do have to be willing to take those risks. So let me give you an example. I'm thinking of one of my members who is a soap maker. She makes soap, fantastic soap, by hand, from scratch, you know, hundreds of bars at a time. And over the years, she's, you know, obviously become known for that. But she's also received requests from people who want to learn how to make it either as a hobby or maybe they want to start their own business. So could that be, you know, just a general way to think about an example of someone in the industry that we deal with here, the audience that we're talking to? That's an example, right, of creating a new plank that helps your platform expand, and which could lead to other things that just selling the soap by itself would not necessarily lead to.
It could, and I'm a big believer in openness, but I think like any other business decision, you have to evaluate the pros and the cons.
For example,
you know, there's a reason that Google doesn't publicly make its source code to its algorithm available online. In fact, it's a black box, and Google changes it, and that's by design. It's the same reason that Apple will not let anyone upload anything to the App Store. There's an approval process, and in the book I write about how certain developers have been upset that their apps couldn't get approved in time. In fact, a couple of years ago, a company spent millions of dollars on marketing, and their app was never approved. So in general, you do want to be open, but there are limits to that. And one of the things that I point out in the book, Donna Marie, is that there is no one right way to build a platform. Again, Amazon and Facebook are very different in the sense that early on, Jeff Bezos was intent on getting big as fast as possible. Conversely, Facebook, if you look at what Zuckerman did, and this is detailed in depth in an excellent book called The Facebook Effect by David Kirkpatrick, I highly recommend it. There were schools in 2006 and 2007 clamoring for Facebook, but Zuckerberg knew that he didn't have enough computing power to make it available, and ultimately schools would log on and the students would have a really downgraded experience. So they took a much more cautious approach until they opened it up to the masses. They weren't about getting as big as fast as possible. So, again, in these examples here, which really permeate the book, I try to make it clear that there's no one right way to do it. It's not just about, to continue your example with the person who sells soap, just making everything available. It's like any other business decision. I think it does need to be looked at in terms of costs and benefits.
Okay, so obviously that's a good point to make, that it's a business decision. And, you know, it's interesting that we're sort of going down this route, because in sort of the handmade world, you know, the small micro companies, you know my audience, Phil, you know who I'm talking about. They really do enjoy what they do. They love teaching. They love sharing. And so for many of them, it's a natural extension of something that they already like to do that they can use. In fact, I know lots of soap making teachers, and I used to be one of them, who would sell more soap at a soap making class than almost any place else, because when people come and learn how to do it, they're like, well, I got to buy some from the expert while I'm here. So they would buy everything. But, you know, I want to ask you this. Tell me, if you would, Phil, how some of the tools that we can use in today's technological world, like blogs and Facebook and Twitter, how, if at all, do these things fit into the planks? Are they planks in and of themselves? Are social networks planks that we use to build our platform? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I very much believe that they are planks, but just to kind of close your loop on the passionate soap maker, it's no coincidence that the founders of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, the Gang of Four, were so passionate. You know, Jeff Bezos used to work at a hedge fund, and he did very well, but he was more passionate about technology. So I agree with you that the money will follow the passion. But to get back to your question, I do think that, again, you do need to know your audience. If you sell, for example, wheelchairs, and your target audience is people who are over the age of 65, odds are they're not terribly active in social media. They maybe wouldn't respond to an email newsletter as much as someone who's, you know, 25 years old and works in technology. So I'm not saying that every platform is the same, nor am I saying that every platform is an elixir. If you sell beepers, which is one of my favorite examples in the book from that show 30 Rock,
about
Liz Lemon's boyfriend, he thinks, and this is very funny, that technology is cyclical and beepers are coming back. Well, maybe he knows something that I don't know, but no one's buying beepers these days. So just building a platform isn't going to guarantee success, but if you look at the companies that are having so much success these days, you know, the Gang of Four or Twitter or WordPress or Adobe, some of the other emerging platforms that I talk about in the book, they have embraced the platform. And conversely, if you look at the companies that are struggling that people know about, like AOL, like Yahoo, like MySpace, they don't really have what I would consider to be a powerful platform.
And, you know, as you mentioned those examples, one thing that occurs to me is that they're not embracing people. They're not embracing new ideas in a relevant and obvious way. I mean, just when you listed those companies, that immediately stuck out to me.
Well, that's a tough thing to say. I mean, look, it's by no means am I overly critical of the companies that I mentioned, because, you know, without MySpace, maybe there wouldn't have been Facebook. Without AOL, you know, maybe there wouldn't have been some of the companies we see today. But again, if you look at the companies, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, that really are killing it right now, to put it frankly. They are, I think, embracing risk. And I was unaware when I was writing the book, Donna Maria, of a book that looked at the platform as a new business model, but also looked at these four companies within that context. Certainly books have been written about each company individually, but I really wanted to analyze and synthesize the lessons that these companies can teach businesses of all size.
And let's talk about that, too, for a second. I know I didn't mean to say at all that you were being critical. That was just really me saying what I see, so I guess maybe I'm being critical. But, you know, what I see, though, is, and tell me what you think about this, is a, let me see, how do I want to say this, so I don't want to be too overly critical. You know, just being able to, you used to be able to start a business, and when your business started, if you had a decent product and, you know, you had some little money in the bank and you could market and you loved what you did and there was a demand for what you had, you could just start at square one and stay there for years and years. And I guess in some industries you can still do that. But for the most part, you have to be able to start and then move to the next level and then move to the next level. It reminds me of Blockbuster, which was like across the street from every Redbox I ever saw for 4 years before they finally started putting their own up. So as a small business owner, you know, sort of whittling that down to smaller businesses, when you start something, it may be great, but if your ear isn't to the ground to find new planks, new ways, whether it's a new stream of income, as you mentioned earlier, there's obviously the things you have to be concerned about there, or whether it's, you know, using Facebook or whatever as part of your plan, you have to be able to advance yourself and your business in that way. Or else, regardless of how good your product is and how well it works, it's just not going to be relevant for the long
term. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the world is changing whether you like it or not. For instance, when I moved to Las Vegas, I searched for someone to do the landscaping in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very disturbing that for many small businesses in landscaping for Las Vegas, which is a niche area, I'm aware of that, the first thing that would come up for a company when I Googled it was the Yelp page or the Angie's List page. And now if I'm the owner of that company, I want my website to be the first thing that comes up when I Google. And when you go to these company sites and they look very primitive, they don't have a lot of pictures, you know, that is going to make an impression with people. And in fact, when I was looking at moving companies when I lived in New Jersey, I sat down with a guy, and he gave me his pitch, and he threw out a number, and I quickly went on Yelp, and he had 5 reviews, and they were all 1-star, and 1-star is bad. And I told the guy, he was the owner of the company, I said, do you realize that people have very bad things to say about your company on Yelp? And his response, Donna Maria, was, what's Yelp? Now, if you're a small business owner and you don't know what Yelp is, you know, that's a problem. I'm not saying you can manage it, what everyone's doing on Yelp, but if you're unaware of it, if you're not interacting with people, if you're not soliciting people to contribute to your platform, then that can be a real problem. Hello?
Phil? I'm still here, Phil. I'm sorry. We had a power surge of some sort, and it made my phone act funny, and it went off. And so I'm coming back into the show. So for you guys that are here, I am really sorry that we had that issue. So maybe Phil will call back in. Let's see if he'll do that. He's not calling back in. Bill? Bill? Phil? Phil? I'm still here. Bill?
Yes, hello.
Hey, we had the strangest, weird weather-related power surge thing here. I don't know what happened. I am so sorry about that. We will definitely have to...
Are you still on?
But we have a few more minutes, so...
Hello?
Sorry about that.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So that was strange, but I called back and I didn't hear anything. So anyway,
Sorry. Yes, please continue. We were talking about, you were saying that times have changed and, sitting still. I did sort of the Blockbuster Redbox analogy there for small businesses. Is what I'm trying to get at is for very, very small businesses with limited resources, the platform is even more important when you say, because without it, without the platform that you can build, injecting your personality and all of your other assets that differentiate you from everyone else, you really oftentimes have a serious challenge propelling your business forward without that.
Well, business today is tough even with a platform. Companies like Google, Amazon, Apple, and Facebook are not complacent. Despite the fact that these companies are having such incredible levels of success, they're always worried about the next big thing. In the book, Don Maria, I talk a lot about the elimination of barriers to entry, right? So this isn't 1920 when you're building a railroad or you're building an airline and you're talking about billions of dollars of capital. Today, to your point, it doesn't cost a great deal of money to start a business or build a website or start a Facebook page or opening a Twitter account is free. So those are table stakes, and I just think it's really important for people to build the platform because they still are going to have a lot of work to do. But you can have the most wonderful company for whatever you do, but if no one knows about it because you don't have a platform, how is someone going to find you?
Well, let me read this from your book because I love this. It's on page 153. And in the time we have left, I want you to really comment on this from a small business perspective. You say that when you have a platform, you can reach a bevy of customers, users, vendors, partners, and even employees. They are more likely, these platforms, to lead to what you call, quote-unquote, accidental lines of business, sources of revenue, and innovation. Platforms mitigate risk, enable diversification, build and extend your brand, and create virtual barriers to entry to real and would-be competitors. So it's almost like you create, I definitely don't want to say a fortress, but you certainly can have these almost intangible things around you that protect and support and create a platform for your business that others don't have that differentiate you and give you a springboard to move forward.
Absolutely. And these days, you know, it's not necessarily about who has the best content. It's something that I tell some of my larger business clients that work with smaller businesses. You know, you started a blog in 2010 or 2011. Well, congratulations. There are many existing blogs out there that already have loyal audiences. They have platforms. Or you started a Facebook page, or you started a YouTube channel. That's all fine and dandy, but that doesn't mean, unless your name is Charlie Sheen, that the world is going to pay attention, right? So that's just one of the things that I really try to impress upon people. And if you are a small business owner, yes, it's not terribly difficult to build a platform, but if you're trying to reach people on that platform, that is going to take some time. And any sort of advantage that you have because you have the coolest website or the neatest videos is by definition fleeting, because if other people see that, they can emulate what you've done. I mean, Google Plus, some would say, is a knockoff of Facebook. I wouldn't quite go that far, but you know, you're sort of hawking your wares to the world and they can see what you're doing. And the way development has progressed, it isn't terribly difficult to build something that's at least comparable.
So if it's not the best content, what is it, the most consistent best content? What is it? I mean, if you need content, which I think we all agree you do.
Sure.
If it's not the best, I mean, we see lots of people with not the best and they're thriving. What are they
right.
doing?
Well, some of it's about first mover advantage, right? I could start a bookstore with $30,000. I can go to a site like Elance.com, hire some smart developers, and boom, I've got Phil's bookstore. But no one knows about it. So I think branding, to your point, is really important. People are familiar with a particular interface. People grew up using Google. Some people these days grew up using Facebook. It's a part of their DNA. I read a statistic the other day that something like 19% of all time spent on the Internet is on Facebook. That's an astonishing number. So if you're starting a new social network, you may say, wait a minute, is this really the best course of action? Because, you know, Facebook kind of is the dominant player right now. So I'm smart enough to say that I'm not that smart. I can't tell you there is that one thing. You know, Google, just as an example, has failed all the time. You know, Google Plus is successful. It has over 50 million users in record time. But this is Google's fourth attempt to create a social plank in its platform. So if there is one thing, Donna Maria, I would say that it is a matter of accepting failure. It's going to happen. You know, Thomas Edison said, I didn't invent the light bulb. I invented 999 ways not to do it.
Oh, that's such a good thing to make sure that people know that you're going to really have your nose to the grindstone no matter what you do in business today. So you have to come to the table knowing that. And Phil, I love your point about the importance of creating that consistency and really making business decisions and being prepared to fail. I like to say we're sort of living in a constant state of beta. We've got 60 seconds left because of my weird thing here. Phil, tell us where to go to get this book, where to go to get more of Phil Simon.
The site for the book is theageoftheplatform.com. My main website is philsimonsystems.com. And at Twitter, I'm at Phil Simon.
I encourage you guys to get this book. I encourage you to follow Phil on Twitter. This man has done so much research, and he has broken this down in this book specifically for small businesses. His other book, The New Small, he was a guest on the podcast a bit ago when that book came out. He's prolific, and he's doing it. He's not just saying what he's read and putting it out there and, you know, summarizing. He's doing it himself, so I want you to check him out. We'll see you next week on Indie Business Podcast. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.